Well, as we draw closer to the biggest golf event of 2025, on this episode of Musings on Golf, we glean insights from a major champion who has a unique perspective on the European Ryder Cup team. Hello, once again, on behalf of Jenna Self, our executive producer, I am Kelly Elvin, and you will soon be hearing from Rich Beem, the winner of the 2002 PGA Championship, who for the past decade has been an analyst for Sky Sports in the UK. Rich has been there for all of golf's top events over that time, and the fact that he spent a lot of time watching the best European players is something that will be of great interest to anyone who is a fan of the game, and in particular, of what's going to take place in just a couple weeks at Bethpage Black at the Ryder Cup. On the flip side of the interview with Rich, we'll talk about the U.S. continuing its recent dominance of the Walker Cup. Boy, how spectacular was it to see Cypress Point on television? What a magnificent golf course. So many people who have played the game a long time at the elite level say that that's the one place that they would play. And maybe you had a good understanding if you're able to watch the U.S. win at Cypress Point. I have some thoughts as well on Rory McIlroy's dramatic win at the Irish Open. A few comments on the 10 U.S. Ryder Cup players who are competing in the PGA Tour event this week in Northern California. But before we get to the interview with Rich Beem, I want to pay a final tribute to my late great friend and mentor, Bob Bupka, who was laid to rest on Saturday in his beloved hometown of Sag Harbor on Long Island in New York. It was lovely. It was poignant. It was classic Bobby in a way, because as much as we know Bob Bupka as the guy who covered golf for all the years, heard him on weekends, Westwood One back in the day, and then through Talk Sport, he's Bobby to those who know him in the small town. It's really just a little village, 3,000 people in Sag Harbor. Even to the point where during some beautiful comments from Priest. Bob was Catholic and priest at the funeral home shortly before we laid Bob to rest, was talking about Bob calling him, the priest, to congratulate him on winning the senior club championship at his course and how special that was for him. And that was Bob. Never forgot his roots. I think I mentioned this several times that WLNG, the radio station in Sag Harbor, Bob grew up there calling high school football games, and he continued to contribute reports for 50 years on that station. Love Bob Bupka. I will miss him greatly. Jenna Self, his loving, loyal companion for so many years, was there the entire time she asked me to stand with her at the grave as they played taps. Bob's time in the service recognized his daughter, Robin, who put together just an absolutely beautiful tribute for her dad, was presented with the American flag. Very moving, and I'm just glad I was there. And I'm glad that Bob Bupka was in my life, and his spirit, for me, along with that voice, will carry on for a long, long time. Okay, Rich Beem, someone who Bob Bupka reported on when Rich won PGA Championship in 2002 at Hazeltine National outside of Minneapolis. What an interesting career for a guy who won the Kemper Open as a rookie in 1999 at TPC at Avenel in Potomac, Maryland, outside of Washington. But really, the why we know Rich Beem is what happened over a three-week span in the summer of 2002 when he won the International out in Colorado, the old modified Stableford event. And then 2 weeks later at Hazeltine National outside of Minneapolis, shooting 68 in the final round and holding off a ridiculously hard-charging Tiger Woods, who birdied the last four holes but couldn't catch Rich Beem, for Rich to capture a major championship that changed his life. Unfortunately, from a playing perspective for Rich, injuries curtailed him quite a bit. And finally, his game just wasn't good enough to compete on the PGA Tour tried a little bit overseas. And then in 2015, he caught on with Sky Sports, which covers extensively all the major sports in Europe and has made a huge commitment to golf. And Rich has been a mainstay over the past decade as an analyst and a commentator and someone who really knows his stuff and someone who really knows the players very well in Europe. And you'll hear that in the interview that we have with him. Funny guy, insightful, and you know, he's taken advantage of a life-changing win and as part of our lead up to the Ryder Cup. By the way, next week, Bones McKay, Phil Mickelson's longtime caddy and now has done such a good job on NBC sports coverage of golf will be our guest. But Rich Beem, this week, you're really going to enjoy that interview, and you'll hear it right after this from our friends, our corporate partners at William & Harry and Titleist. America, this is your moment. William & Harry's limited edition spirit shoe is here to honor the Ryder Cup so every fan can feel like part of Team USA from the first tee to the final putt. Two head-turning designs, premium deerskin, 100% water-resistant with spikeless grip and all-day comfort. Just so you know, there's a limited run on these shoes, so don't sit this one out. Pre-buy now at williamandharry.com. Get into spirit, get into comfort.
Titleist Pro V1 and Pro V1X are the best performing, most consistent in the game. So how does the best get better? You start by listening to the best players in the world. You experiment, iterate, validate. You trust the best process to create the best golf ball the game has ever known. The all-new Pro V1 and Pro V1X. More speed off the tee. More control with your irons. More spin with your wedges. And more opportunity to shoot your lowest score.
Well, the great game of golf is filled with epic tales of the lovable underdog knocking off the imposing, often intimidating champion. And our guest today lived the role of that underdog and etched his place in the history books 23 years ago on a sunny Sunday afternoon outside of Minneapolis. We will most certainly talk about that 2002 PGA Championship title, and we'll look ahead to another massive battle that he'll be reporting on in 2 weeks at the 45th Ryder Cup on Long Island. What a treat to be joined by Rich Beem here on Musings on Golf. How you doing, Rich?
Good. How you doing today?
I'm doing great. You've been now 10 years with Sky Sports. What are your responsibilities, Rich, in particular for the Ryder Cup? What will you be on course, in the booth, what?
Antagonist is my main role. Being the lone American on a UK broadcast. So, yeah, I'm the one that gets to poke the bear every single day. In fact, you know, funny enough, I just got my shipment of stickers that I'll be putting on people's coffee cups. I've got the American ones right here and about 200 flags that I'll be, you know, just putting randomly places in my workspace. So antagonist is the number one. And then I don't know. It's interesting. Some years they put me out for the first matches on the golf course. And then in the second matches, I'll go back in the commentating booth. I don't know what the team looks like this year. I hope that I'll be kind of that same role. But we've added a couple of folks. So my guess is that I'll just be in the commentating booth, kind of rotate in and out throughout the day. But I'd much rather be on the golf course if I could. And maybe, just maybe, since we're doing it in the U.S., they'll throw me out there.
Rich, in my time at the PGA of America as head of communications, I was at several Ryder Cups. You've been at several Ryder Cups. How do you explain to someone who's a golf aficionado who's never been to a Ryder Cup what it is like in person?
Yeah, it's different. I've had the pleasure of having two Ryder Cups home in the U.S. than two Ryder Cups away. And one in France and one in Rome. And it's like going to, it's going to like a Super Bowl
at the home team's venue. Like it would have been, you know, either at the Eagles or at the Chiefs last year. It is all one-sided for the most part. If you have 30,000 people out there, 28,000 of them are rooting for the home team, and the other 2,000 are rooting for the away team. So this is going to be a little different being in Long Island. To a point, you know, I think, as you well know, that a lot of the folks that come to the Ryder Cup nowadays, it's more corporate-based. Selling tickets to individuals is kind of slowed down a little bit. I know that there was a lot of chatter about some of the tickets when they first opened them up at $750 per day, which, you know, it's a lot of money. But again, most of the ticket sales are now going to corporate hospitality. They're not going to, you know, to the guys that the working guys. So it's different. It's fun. You know, it's you got to wear whatever the home team colors are, or you're going to get ostracized a little bit. So it's always different in each particular venue. And again, Long Island could be a little bit more verbal, a little bit more raucous. But I also think that the PGA of America has probably got a little bit more security wandering around. Probably a lot more folks in plain clothes that are ready to drag folks out for being a little bit too vocal and whatnot. But I kind of find it funny because sometimes you hear some of the funniest things. People will do their homework and they'll zap a player without insulting him, but that just it'll say something like, going, "That's pretty clever. That's pretty funny."
Well, that's part of the charm of the event. That's
exactly right.
The chants from the Euros on the first tee, I can still hear those from 11 years ago at Glen Eagles, and it's just it echoes, right? It doesn't.
I've never
leave your brain.
No, I've never seen a spectacle like I saw in France. It was unbelievable. Just the amount of people, the grandstands there, and then you have one guy doing the chant. You know, doing this. I think it's the Norwegian or whatever it is. Chant like this, and then it goes. It gets faster and faster, and it's just like, holy cow, you've got at least 5,000 people in these grandstands, and they just go up. I mean, it's got to be 15 stories tall. I mean, it's hard to explain, but I've got videos, and I still get goosebumps every time I look at the videos because it's just so different. You just kind of see all these people coming together as a home team, and, you know, Tony Finau hit the opening tee shot, and I'm like going, you couldn't pay me enough. There's not enough money in the world for me to get up there and pull out a golf club and try and hit a fairway, much less. I mean, finding planet Earth would have been a success story for me if I had to hit that shot. It's intimidating. It is absolutely intimidating when you're an away team. And I would imagine even for a home team, you're you know, because you don't want to let anybody down. You don't want to screw it up. So it certainly is, it'll get your attention in a hurry.
Hey, let's stick with Sky Sports for a second. I mentioned you've been with them for a decade. You're poking the bear. You are the American among the UK's. I mean, it's kind of the Sky Sports. It, for those who don't know, Rich, is kind of, can we say it's the ESPN of the UK? Is that a fair?
That's thing? Well, it's kind of the ESPN for the rest of the world because they actually have. There's so many different places that our broadcast goes to. You know, it streams all over the world, Australia, it goes down to South Africa, almost every country in Europe, Middle East, things like that. But it's a subscription-based channel, kind of like DirecTV, but you're right. It's like the ESPN because we produce our own shows, we have our own cameras, we have all of it. So the golf division does it a little bit differently, but I mean, if you look at F1, if anybody is a fan of F1 in the U.S. here in the U.S., you see everybody there. So Sky Sports on the microphone. We've doubled the amount of Premier League games in the U.K. Now what we see over here is mostly NBC, but again, NBC and Sky Sports are owned by Comcast. So you kind of had some of that cross-pollinization a little bit. But we cover everything. We cover every sport. We have our own production. We do movies. I mean, it's mind-boggling what they do. It's a great entity to work for, but we're just one small speck of sand in this massive, massive beach of what they do. It's pretty cool, though. It again, being the lone American on it again, it's a lot of fun. You know, the stuff that I get to do, and my boss has fun with it. You know, he understands that I'm there to poke the bear, especially when it's a home game. They expect some fun things to pop up, and they're certainly going to get it.
There's a funny story that you can tell our listeners that kind of relates to that poking the bear type of mentality.
Well, you know, it's just like every time the Ryder Cup comes in. And so we have our own 18-wheeler, basically our own production truck that follows us around. We were the first one to have it. Now, I think NBC and CBS have it. And so we can produce our stuff, and they have a little lounge for us. We do all of our commentary out of it. You know, we have our own self-sufficient 18-wheeler. And so, again, second time around up at Whistling Straits, I've got the keys for it. So I went in, and there was streamers, there was balloons, you couldn't walk in and not see red, white, and blue all around. First thing Tuesday morning, because nobody's there Monday morning. So I got out there Tuesday morning, first thing. And, you know, I've got outfits that I wear. You know, they're trying to make, you know, we're going to wear coat and ties. Listen, I've got some other stuff that's showing up. I'm going to be decked out in some different American stuff. And it's just, you know, you have fun with it. And but I think that the thing that I like the most is I respect the Europeans. In fact, I probably get along with the European players probably better. I know them more so than the U.S. players because we have to follow the Europeans. So I know Rory McIlroy a heck of a lot better than Scottie Scheffler. You know, Tommy Fleetwood is a close pal of mine. You know, I know Sam Burns. Sam Burns and I say hi, but I don't know his wife. I don't know his kids, but I know Tommy. I know his kids. I know his family. You know, I know his dad. So I've got a much better relationship with, I think, the players from Europe. And I keep telling us for 103 weeks, every 2 years, I love you. But that 104th week, up yours. I hope you shoot 105. I can't, you know. I hope you get a case of the shanks and the tops, and you know. But other than that, I love them the other 3 weeks in between the Ryder Cups.
Yeah, you love them because, as you mentioned, with Fleetwood and with Rory, it's kind of hard to root against a lot of those guys, just in terms of their personalities, right, Rich?
Yeah, they seem to embrace, you know. They don't give standard answers when it comes to doing time. And a lot of times, you know, being from Sky Sports, being in the UK, we get the second questions for them after a tournament, whatnot. And so we, you know, they say that we only have two questions, and sometimes we'll ask them a third question and we might get in our hands slapped or whatnot. But they seem to want to talk to us because they know that they're talking to their fans back home. It's just not the American fans. They know they're talking to the folks back in Ireland, UK, Scotland, wherever. And so they're a little bit more open to having chat with us and then going to the driving range. You know, we get just a lot more banter with them. McIntyre, golly. As you know, he's been massively friendly to me as of late, you know, sit there and chat with me going down the fairways. And it's great. It's great to get to know these guys and see their personalities off the golf course and certainly on it as well. So we get a lot of, we do very well with those relationships. And I think that's why I've gotten to know them better because, you know, again, I don't think anybody truly loves going to the media, but when you're a European or a foreigner and you come over to the US and you get to talk to somebody that is where it's going back home, it's cooler. Just like when we go to the Open Championship, you know, a lot of the guys don't mind talking to folks after the round because, you know, the people that aren't able to come over from the US, they get to see him and talk. And so it's kind of like having, you know, I'm talking to my folks back home.
Exactly. Essentially. 2002 PGA champion Rich Beem joining us here on Musings on Golf. I'm going to take that one step further, if I may, Rich. There's long been that discussion and that for whatever reason, there's more camaraderie, cohesion among the European players in general. I'm not talking about just Ryder Cup week, but in general. Is that, based on you spending a lot more time, is that a fair statement that there is as compared to the American guys?
Yes and no. Again, I think that when you travel, even though Rory's got a home here, a lot of guys make their home here. You still have a similar background. And when you come, you know, Rory's been living in the United States, I don't know how long, but been 15, maybe even 20 years. But still, he's not from here. And yet, so when he gets to talk to folks that, you know, I know he's good pals with Tommy Fleetwood, Shane Lowry, obviously, another Irishman. But you get to kind of talk because they grew up playing golf together, and then all of a sudden now they're on the biggest stage in the planet. But I also think that, you know, Jordan Spieth and Justin Thomas and Ricky Fowler were similar ilk. Mm-hmm. So I think that a lot of that is gone kind of by the wayside a little bit, where the camaraderie is stronger among the Europeans, because I think that you still get some of the, you know, the U.S. guys, like Xander Schauffele and Patrick Cantlay are close pals. I know that Sam Burns and Scottie Scheffler, close pals. You know, so I think that, you know, we have more depth in golf in the U.S., so sometimes we're going to get these new guys that we don't know much about, and how that, like Ben Griffin, how is he going to fit into the team? Because he's kind of a new guy, actually left golf and only got back into it a couple of years ago. So you kind of have new blood there. But I think that when you're European, they seem to embrace you. I don't want to say more, it's just different. You know, I think the Europeans are not threatened by guys that are new coming out. I think that they, you know, want to help harness you a little bit and kind of show you the ropes, you know, so to speak, where I think in the U.S., these guys are, you know, and it's not like the Europeans don't have the same thing, but agents are right next to them 24/7. You know, they have I think the U.S. kind of has a little bit different support system. But again, when they go overseas, they tend to hang out together a little bit more. The U.S. guys, they'd get houses together, things like that. It, you know, and even sometimes here in the U.S. So I don't necessarily agree with the fact that there's better cohesion with those guys. It's just the fact that they play a lot of practice rounds together with each other. Just because they grew up playing golf together. Now they're, you know, down on PGA Tour. So on a Tuesday, it's pretty easy for that to happen. But, you know, I still think that the U.S. side has got more cohesion than people give credit for. I really do.
Great. That's great to hear. All right, the two greatest weeks of your professional career. You win at the International, the old Stableford, modified Stableford event at Castle Pines in the summer of 02. 2 weeks later at Hazeltine, you capture the PGA Championship. I'm wondering, did you have any inkling, any sense going into those two events that your game was at the level where you could make the magical, incredible run that you did?
Well, at the International, yeah. I was playing great up in that year. I think I was supposed to take like 3 weeks off, going on vacation with my wife back to her hometown. It might have been just 2 weeks off, but I was up there for a week up in a place called St. Mary's, Idaho, where she's born and raised. And I was there for a week, and it's not that I wasn't relaxed. I was enjoying myself immensely, but he's like, you know, I feel like I'm playing well. I feel like, you know, I need to be out there playing well, and I just can't sit here. So I think it was after a week, I called up my caddy and said, hey, listen, I know we're supposed to have 2 weeks off. You got any problem with coming up to Moline, Illinois with me if you don't want to? But I think we go play the John Deere. I said, sure. So we go there, and I think we shoot 67 the first day. Decent round, this and that. And then we play late the second day, and I shoot 74, 75 or something. I'm going like, what in the hell was that? We ended up actually catching the first flight out. We got the last flight out of Chicago into Denver that night. I got it like at 1 a.m. or something like that. And then we went and spent 36, or sorry, two days to play 36 holes at Castle Pines over the weekend, and felt great. You know, it was a perfect rounds, but you know, everything felt great. It was fun. But I just had a sense that I was playing well, but I would always have a day where things weren't
like, and it was usually the second rounds. Second rounds, I usually was just, I'd start off well, and the second rounds were bad. And that was kind of consistent all year long. Same thing happened at John Deere. And then almost same thing happened at Castle Pines, where I struggled the second day, but I ended up with 0 points, which is, it's not great by any stretch of imagination, but I didn't shoot myself in the foot. And then I had a great weekend. But yeah, I mean, there's a sense of I was playing well. Again, to win on the PGA Tour, as we've seen with a number of players, it's not like just waking in bed and just, I'm playing great, so I'm going to go win. It takes, you know, it takes a lot of belief and some great play and a little bit of help from some guy that decided to make birdies and eagles on every single old cup chop the stretch in Steve Lowry. But yeah, I think that I was one of those players that when I knew I was playing well, I could turn it loose. There wasn't any, there's nothing going to hold me back. I wasn't scared. Was I nervous? Of course I was nervous, but I wasn't fearful of hitting a bad shot at any given time. I didn't care. If I hit a bad shot, I'm going to go I'll either go get it up and down, or I'll make something out of nothing. And then I'll go birdie the next whirls. You know, I was that kind of player, and I had that self-belief.
The winning at Castle Pines, that mentality, did that automatically carry over to Hazeltine National, going, okay, I'm in a good place. I don't care if it's a major championship. I'm going to win this damn thing.
Because that was my fourth ever major that I ever teed it up in. And the majors are always different, I think, as everybody knows, as a player anyways. But even as a spectator, you go and you can tell the difference between even the AT&T Pebble Beach, when it's just a tournament there, and then where the U.S. Open is there. It's a completely different animal. And so I got there on Sunday beforehand, and my caddy and I went out and played first thing on Monday morning, because I want to go see the golf course, see what it is I needed to do. And we kind of found that we really liked the golf course. You know, it was a good driving golf course for us. Had a great practice round on Tuesday, and then we got out to the golf course on Wednesday, and like, I don't think I need to do anything. Like, we're ready. Like, if I sit here and hit golf balls for 3 hours, I'm wasting time. I'm wasting my energy hitting balls for 3 hours. So we went out there for like 90 minutes, spent more than half that time chipping, you know, out of the heavy rough and things like that, stuff that we weren't quite used to. And then after 90 minutes, we just got out of there. I think we were done by 10 a.m. And I said, I'm going to go hang out with my wife. And he went and played golf across town. He was staying with his brother-in-law, so he went and played golf across town. So, but still, you know, Hazeltine was also very different because I'd never seen that many people on a Monday at a venue. I mean, there must have been 30,000 people, if there's a soul, when I got done off the 18th green. And I was just like, I was shocked by how many people were there. Now, granted, as you well know, big past PGA, they have all the infrastructure in the world there. I mean, they can park as many people as they want to. They've got so much land. It's a perfect venue to have to have anything. You know, they're going to be the first American course to host the Ryder Cup twice. So that just kind of shows that how much the PGA loves going there, because they can kind of do whatever they want as far as build out and infrastructure. I mean, they don't have to sit there. It's not hard to figure out. It's pretty simple. So, I think that, you know, the golf course I liked it. You know, I like the golf course, but again, you still got to go out there and you got to play in front of all these people. And I knew I was playing well, obviously, but still, it's a major, and I didn't get off to a very good start. To be fair, I bogeyed the first hole. I made like an 8-footer on the second hole. And then I think it made like a 40-footer for par on the third hole. I'm going, gee, even at Christmas, what's going on? You know, kind of got my head in the game a little bit, but I struggled the first round. You know, I shied even par, but I made a lot of bogeys, but thankfully I also made a ton of birdies as well. And that's what kept me in it. I think I had like six pars, six bogeys, and six birdies. And if you have six birdies at a major venue anywhere, yeah, that's a good thing. You can handle the bogeys as long as you're making the birdies. So I knew that if I could make birdies, that I was going to be okay with, which I did. I ended up making a bunch of birdies the second day as well, and found myself in the lead, and then just had a great weekend.
I think you were three shots behind Justin Leonard going into the final round on Sunday. Rich Beam, for those of us who would never have the opportunity, the awareness, the understanding, what is it like trying to win your first major championship and the guy who is ferociously on your heels is Tiger Woods in his prime, and he's birdies the last four holes? What the world was that like for you?
No, it's pretty surreal. I think there's one of the funny stories I have about that is, you know, the driving range on Sunday is, you know, when you're on the last group, it's quiet. There's only a few people out there hitting balls. And I just got done with my warm up, and I was walking over the chipping green, and Butch Harmon, who was coaching Tiger Woods at the time, and who's now, I find him a dear, dear friend of mine. I love, love, love Butch Harmon. But it was Butch, Tiger, and Stevie. And I walk by, and Tiger really doesn't look at me. And I goes, "Hey, play well today. Good luck." Who in the hell says good luck, play well today to the best player in the history of the game? Like, what am I thinking? I'm sitting there looking, and I'm going, did I just say that? Really? Did I just say that? Like, what in the world? I'm like, I hope you shoot 80. I mean, like, seriously, I don't want you to play well. I don't wish you any good luck. But I did, you know. It was funny. But, you know, again, the truth of the matter is that I was playing well. Again, was I nervous? 100%. Was I scared? No. I got nothing to lose, really. You know,
Rich, by the way, what's the difference between being nervous but not being scared at your level?
And listen, everybody that ever tees it up, and Tiger's even said this, everybody's nervous because it's the anticipation of everything starting. You know, you got to get out there. It's the opening tee shot. You know, you're nervous to start. Like, you want, like, listen, I don't want to play golf at 2:00 in the afternoon. I don't want to tee off that if I'm leading. I want to be out there at 8:30 in the morning. I want to be out there because I want to get going. The more time you have to wait, the more you sit there, your mind can wander, and you can start thinking about things that you don't need to think about. And so you get nervous. Scared is when you're afraid to take the club back. You're afraid that you might hit it in a bad spot. You're afraid that your putter may not work that day. You're afraid of all these people that are around me watching. You know, that's being afraid. Being nervous is just you're excited. You're ready to go. And you know, there's also a part of being nervous is that you don't want to fail. You don't want to fail.
Yeah.
And so I think that's kind of the biggest thing is that you don't want to put a bad foot forward and go out there and fail. I'm not scared of failing. I just don't want to. I just don't want to fail. So that's kind of the difference. Being scared is like, listen, I don't want to be here. That's being scared. Like, I don't want to be here. This is not fun. You know, that's the difference between being nervous and being scared. Like, I still get nervous every time I tee it up, but I'm excited to go play because I don't get a chance to do it a whole lot anymore. I don't usually play very well anymore when I do play. But it's not that I'm scared of playing bad because I know that this is not what I do anymore. I don't play for a living anymore. So I don't get scared, but I get nervous because, you know, when you have to, you know, I think here's the thing that I've seen most as a player. I've seen some of the best amateurs around, and I'm just talking about the club guys, you know, the guys that are scratch 1-2 handicaps, even a plus handicap. They play in their own club championship. And you talk about a guy that shoots even par on average, can shoot, you know, in the 60s, might shoot, you know, 75, 69, you know, this and that. But he's always around par. And all of a sudden, a club championship comes up when it means something, and they're nervous all day long, and they shoot 8. Are they a bad player? No, they're just nervous the entire time. There's a difference between it all. And I think some of the greatest players of all time are guys you probably never heard of because those guys are the gamblers, the guys that aren't afraid of playing for you for 10,000 or more. I just learned about this guy in Las Vegas who apparently is 69 years old. Sklar is his last name.
David Sklar.
Anyway, I had never heard of the guy, but somebody kind of mentioned him, and like, this guy will play anybody for any amount of money at any given time. And, but he's never played on a major tour. He's never done any of that, but he's not afraid to play for a lot of money. That's somebody I want no part of, not even the remote, because they're not nervous or and they're not scared. They're not scared. They might be a little nervous, but they're never scared. And that's the person that's most dangerous. Somebody that's never scared.
Yeah, there's guys like Dewey Tomko, who's very famous, played for a lot of money, great poker player as well.
Dewey Tomko, know this guy. Yeah, absolutely.
Like, Ritz, a guy like Tomko, like you said, it wouldn't even matter if he's playing Scottie Scheffler in his prime right now. He's all about, let's play for the money. I can beat you.
That's exactly right. You give me the scroach where I need that. And listen, this is a great thing. You know, I carry a USGA handicap, and people laugh when they hear that. Like, you have a handicap? Well, you're goddamn right I do. So, I mean, Scottie Scheffler has one. I have one on my phone, and you can look it up right now. Anybody can look it up. I'm like a plus 3.7 right now. That way, when I go out and I play golf, like we played golf yesterday with the guys, I had to give some guys six aside, and I had to give other guys four aside, one guy four and three, and it was equitable, fair and equitable. I started off terrible, but then the last 11 holes, I played great, and I won a few bucks. But I'm playing with a guy that's a 12 handicap or a 10 handicap, and I got to give him, you know, I got to give him six aside, you know, or whatever it was, whatever, however it worked out. But it to me, that's the great thing about having a handicap and why I do it. Dewey Tomko has a handicap. Scottie Scheffler has a handicap. That's why I think that it's, you know, even Scottie said that. Listen, I've got to give guys, I think Scottie's a plus 7 right now, which, funny enough, which is what I was when I was playing at my best out of El Paso Country Club. I got a quick funny story about that. So we used to have handicaps at El Paso Country Club, and I was one of the assistants there. I was a terrible assistant, but I love to play golf. But in 1998, the year I got my tour card, I was playing wonderfully, and I was carrying a plus 7. And so there was always some mini tour guys that would kind of come floating through, some of them past UTEP players and whatnot. And just guys that have kind of all Americans that used to play at a tournament that there. So they come barreling through town, you know, and they come for the Friday game. Friday game is always the bigger kind of game. And they say, okay, well, can I play today? Absolutely. We got room for you. No big deal. So, all right, perfect. And by the way, you're plus 7 today. What?
Yeah.
Listen, see that guy over there folding shirts? See that guy? He's a plus 7. He folds shirts for a living. You're out there banging balls every single day for a living. You're a plus 7 today. Do you want it or not? And you'd be surprised at how many guys say, nah, I'm good. I don't want to be a plus 7 today. I mean, you know, I had to shoot 64 I had to shoot 64. We played a quota game, but I had to shoot 64 to hit my number. If I shot my handicap, then I you win money. If I shoot 65, I don't hit my number, and I lose a little bit. So that's why I carry a handicap. I think it's great for the game of golf. I implore everybody to do it because I think it makes it better. And everybody that I know in the UK, whenever I go to the UK, everybody says, this is what I am. My index is whatever. Like, I don't know what my index is, but here's what my handicap is. Away we go. I love it.
We are deep in the back nine with Rich Beam, the 2002 PGA champion, and looking forward to his role with Sky Sports at the 45th Ryder Cup coming up. You had a lot of fun back in the day. I know through the book with that Alan Shipnuck wrote on Bud Sweat and Tees. I talked a lot about your fun back with Steve Duplantis, your caddy. Nowadays, Mr. Beam, you are Sling Blade Wade. And you talk a little bit about the modern version. For our listeners who don't know,
yeah,
who is that character? How did it come to be? And where do we find him?
So a good friend of mine, Eric Gainers Lang, and his assistant, JoJo Phillips, they kept asking me, like, you know, how do you hustle guys? Because I talk about hustling guys. And really wasn't hustling guys. It was more the gambling games. But you read books about hustling. And to be a good hustler, you win on the first date. you know, you're the bets are set so well that they're stacked in your favor, and you literally can't lose, not unless you go out there and lay a complete egg. But if you're a gambler, you're not going to lay a complete egg. You win on the first tee. So they just said, we want to take two guys out there that don't know who you are, a couple of local club pros, sister pros, and go play a nine-hole match with them. But we want you to, you know, because, and I was telling the story about when I was in college, you get all these kids that would show up. We had a PGM program in New Mexico State, and they would show up brand new golf bags, shoes, clubs, everything. And I just sit there with a beat up golf bag and some shorts and a ripped t-shirt and shoes that were pretty well beat up and whatnot. And nobody would know who I was, you know. And I'd say, listen, you guys got to want to play for a little money today? Sure. So the first 2 weeks of college, I had more beer money than I've ever had. And then after the first 2 weeks, it was just like, damn it. They found me out. So, you know, I kind of played a little bit of a part of, you know, looking like a sad sack a little bit. So
sure.
I kind of did the same thing to these guys and whatnot. But they, you know, funny enough, the name just came up like totally out of the blue. I was just leaving home that morning, and my son's middle name is Wade. My wife's maiden name is Wade. And I'm just like Slingblade. That's Slingblade Wade. That's it, baby. I just made up a story, and I still make a story. We've done it twice. The second one, I was the target. Funny enough, they brought out two kids that had just come from that had just signed with Texas, and I kind of found them out pretty quickly because after the third on the third hole, I'm sitting there looking at their grips. I'm going, eight handicappers don't have grips like this. Like two guys, they say they're tennis guys. I'm like, I'm not buying this.
What was it about the grips?
No, they're just how they grip the club. How they grip the golf club. Yeah, I'm like, yeah, nobody that is a good, like, now, funny enough, if Jordan Spieth would have shown up, I'd have been like, okay, I could see he's an ache. I love George Spieth to death. I goop on it because his grip is a little bit unorthodox, but these kids' grips were perfect. And there's a couple of small moves that I could see, but I kind of felt like on the third tee box, I'm like, I think we're getting hustled. You can kind of see it in the video, and they put that in there. But so I was the mark on the second one. But it's just kind of a fun little time. And we just play nine holes and it was good. I think after about the fifth hole, Eric told me that, you know, basically I was the mark and this and that. I'm like, game on, let's go. I'm not afraid of you. You know, let's go. So we had a good time with that. And these two kids, I think, are be really good at players, but they both freshmen at the University of Texas. It was a good time. But the first one, it was, we told them on the 8th who I was, and they're like, oh my God, you know, but I tried to dress up a little bit for the second one, but, you know, I couldn't quite do it I couldn't do it both times because we're at country clubs, but if we're at a public golf course, I'd have showed up with, you know, a white beater shirt on and a massive, you know, hat. But anyways, we had fun with it.
Speaking of fun, have you always had sort of that carefree, sort of fun loving way about you? Is that in your nature?
Absolutely.
It's you.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. And it drove my dad nuts. But yeah, I mean, listen, I always kind of looked at the fun because I always liked the stories. Like I remember my dad telling me funny stories about when he was in college and, you know, acting like a degenerate at times. I'm going, now this is funny to me. You know, I like those free will people who, you know, we take life seriously, but you always kind of find the fun things to do in life. And, I can't go through life not looking at the funny things that happen. And I think that's why I love commentary because, you know, when I first got into it, everybody says, well, be yourself. I'm like, well, who else can I be? Right. Again, though, I think being myself, though, I think everybody's like this. You take things that people that you associate with, you like, or even on TV or anything, you take small things away from their personalities and you try and kind of engage into yours a little bit. And that's kind of how I've been a little bit. But I had never, like Gary McCord, he would read a thesaurus or whatnot and come up with his crazy words to say on air. I'm like, well, what in the world does that mean? I think where my personality on TV is that if somebody says something, I'll pick up on it and I can run with it then. So I don't really draw things out of thin air too much. Like I remember playing golf with a guy here in Texas, I live in a place, Horseshoe Bay, Texas. I played golf with a guy, hits this foul ball and gosh, I wouldn't even go look for my kids over there, you know? And I'm like, that's pretty funny.
Pretty good. Yes.
And so this year at the Masters, Victor Hovland on the 10th tee snap hooks one. Hey, you left, you know, and I just right in the middle of the deep, dark trees over there. And I just kind of came up and said, I wouldn't even go look for my kids in there, you know. Again, it's just some things I pick up and I hear and this and that. I find it just funny, you know, if Andrew Coulthard or Wayne Riley or somebody that are, they say something that I find unique or funny or a different way you can take it, I pounce. I absolutely pounce because we are still in the entertainment business,
right,
doing commentating. So I try and make it fun. I look at the lighter side of things. Again, you know that there's a time coming down, you know, coming down the stretch, you got to be a little bit more serious. But I also think that even coming down the stretch, sometimes if there's an opportunity that to chuckle about something, you have to do it because listen, we're not curing any cancers out here. This is not, as I like to say, it's not rocket surgery. You know, it's just like we're out here having fun. This is a game. I know it means a lot to these guys. I know it's prestigious, but listen, you gotta see the funny side of life.
Hey, Rich, two final questions. One Ryder Cup related, one personal, and we'll wrap this up. First of all, 2 years ago, outside of Rome, 16.5 to 11.5, the Europeans really, really dominated the U.S. How about give me a pick and a final score at Bethpage? What do you think happens in 2 weeks on Long Island?
Well, here's the thing. I think it's going to come down. There's going to be so many matches that come down to the 18th hole. I just look at these teams as so equal. I almost have to give a slight advantage to the European side because it's basically the same 11 guys. But if you took a picture of them, it's the same 12 guys. You're just replacing one twin with another twin. It's the same picture.
Yeah,
it's amazing. And they have the same Ryder Cup captain. And I think this is where the U.S. side has to really think about this. If you're going to have a Ryder Cup captain on home soil and they have success, you got to take them on the road because everything that they've learned at home, they have to take that on the road because you have to have that consistency. I think that's what makes the Europeans so dangerous is they've got Luke Donald with the same exact vice captains, all of it. So whatever formula they had in Rome, they're bringing it here to the U.S. And again, only one thing has changed, and that's the first name of Rasmussen. And that's it. Other than that, they've got the same exact team. So, but there is something to be said for home field advantage. You know, it's hard to win on away soil, as we've seen time and time again. If the Europeans ever had a beautiful opportunity, it's this year to do it. I think it's going to be 14.5, 13.5. And I'm USA all the way.
Yes.
I mean, so I've got to say that the American, but it's going to be close. It's going to be nail biting. I mean, there's going to be guys where the nerves are at their highest. And at the and when everything is said and done, I mean, I think that both sides will be like, thank God that is over, because I think it's going to be a very, very tight match. And again, I got to go with the red, white, and blue, but I got to say that if there's ever a time that the Europeans can win on away soil, this is probably their best time.
Rich Beam, final question, one I ask at the end of all of my interviews. If you could have a three individuals to round out a dream foursome, and those three individuals, living or deceased, Rich, who would those three be, and where would you go?
I say this, actually, I used to have different names that I came up with, but I kind of came back to like, you know what, there's three people I want to play with. I want to play with my dad again. I want to play with my granddad again, but I want Ben Hogan to join them because Ben Hogan was my dad's hero. Same thing with my granddad. And the one thing they all had in common is they're all smokers. And I'm guaranteeing that Ben Hogan might be a better player than my dad or granddad, but there's no chance that he can outsmoke either one of them. So I want to sit there and watch these guys light up darts, like light cigarettes with cigarettes. I mean, this is going to be a smoke fest. And the place that I would go would be the place that I learned how to play golf. Dad was a head golf professional, worked for the government. And the first ever place that he had a job was White Sands Missile Range Golf Course. There's a little 9-hole golf facility. And go back there and play it as I remember it back in the day. And it's a, now it would be a pitch and putt, but I would, it doesn't matter. I'd do a play and I would just sit there. I just sit and watch these guys smoke because it'd just be a big old chimney out there. And I laugh when I say that because you said, you know, the funny things are like, that's what I would do. It's like literally dad and granddad would be geeking out over Ben Hogan. Ben Hogan would probably be a little cantankerous. And I'd just be sitting there laughing at watching some of these guys like, wow, I can't believe you guys actually light cigarettes with a lit cigarette. That is just amazing. And you sit there and there's never any holes in your shirts. Like, how in the world is this doing? Possible? I mean, how do you guys do this? I mean, I've got so many funny stories about my dad regripping golf clubs, you know, back when they actually used gasoline and whatnot. He's got a cigarette in one hand, pouring the gasoline on the thing. I'm like, I don't see anything quite wrong with this gas lit cigarette and gasoline when you're regripping the club. Totally fine, right? I mean, it's
my father was the head professional at Burning Tree for 50 years. So Rich, that same regripping, I can smell it and see it, right?
And re-whipping the old ones. Dad,
yes,
they re-whip, and then he'd snip it off right there, take the cigarette, and he'd burn it. And listen, that's what we grew up with, you know?
Yes,
this is the stuff that I remember more than anything else. And again, that's why I would pick those three players, just because, again, I miss my dad and granddad dearly. I never got a chance to meet Mr. Hogan, but I just literally, I want to see who can outsmoke who, and I guarantee my dad and my granddad can take Hogan down.
And before we go, why was Mr. Hogan their hero as opposed to Snead or Nelson, et cetera?
I think that they just loved two things. I think they loved his work ethic, but I think that it was just more about, you know, coming back from the accident and having injuries, but just his love of the game. And listen, he wasn't a great player when he first came out, and he actually had to change his swing. It changed his grip, and he would do anything to get better. And he just sat there and would beat golf balls and figure it out, dig it out of the dirt, baby. And I think my dad loved that work ethic, you know, which is why he also kind of looked at me and says, he'll never make it. You know, he doesn't have a work ethic, you know, and I'm like, Sometimes the work ethic is just a little bit different in everybody. And listen, as Jack Nicklaus once said, I leave the driving range once I know I got it. That's the way I took it. That's, listen, I would hit balls until I said, you know what, I got it, and leave. And
kid, you did okay.
I did okay. Yeah, yeah. Things worked out. So, but yeah, it was I got a million stories about that, but yeah, that was awesome. He was a good man.
Rich Beam, this was terrific. Thank you. Have a great call, a great week at Bethpage. It's going to be the event. It's one of the biggest sporting events of the year, not just golf.
Yep, it is. It is, and I can't wait. And I hope, I really hope that they told me to bring a coat and tie, or just wear a coat. I hope that what I have coming is acceptable, because it's truly obnoxious. Like, it's going to be just like over the top, awful, obnoxious. But you know what? American, baby. It's all about America.
America. Thanks so much, man. This was great.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Golf fans, are you ready to wear your pride? William and Harry's limited edition Spirit Shoe is here just in time to celebrate the Ryder Cup. And to help you feel like you're part of Team USA, cheering on every shot. Two bold designs, premium deerskin, spikeless traction, 100% waterproof, and all-day comfort from tee to green
and beyond. Limited production. When they're gone, they're gone. Rebuy now at WilliamAndHarry.com. Get into spirit. Get into comfort.
Well, we thank Rich Beam very much for joining us. He is, as he said, will be on site at Bethpage Black for what promises to be, frankly, as big an event, golf event in this country since the last Ryder Cup was played 4 years ago at Whistling Straits in Wisconsin. I mean, that's just how big the Ryder Cup is, how much attention is paid to it. And while Rich never played in a Ryder Cup, his voice will be loud and clear through Sky Sports coverage of the matches that begin September 26th, that Friday, and go through September 28th. Okay, few other thoughts. Rory McIlroy, it's been an unbelievable season, obviously, in winning the Irish Open in sudden death, made a ridiculously long putt to tie on the 72nd hole, made eagle putt, got into a playoff and won it. Rory had some real positive vibes, some positive words for the Great Britain and Ireland team going into the Walker Cup, exhorting them, encouraging them to win. They didn't, but Rory pretty much said, look, we're going to get the job done at Bethpage. And there's a lot of reason why you would think that the Europeans are. And for Rory, look, Players' Championship, Masters. Now, he had a little bit of a fall off yet, but starting to play well again, obviously, with winning the Irish Open. And it has been, I'm sure, I know, for him the last month. And the next, obviously, few weeks, it's all about the Ryder Cup. He will be laser-focused. That team is going to be tough to beat. It's good to see 10 of the Americans on the U.S. or 10 of the Americans on the team that will be facing the Europeans are playing this week at the PGA Tour event out in Northern California. Bryson DeChambeau, who's on the team, is not eligible because he plays on the LIV Golf Tour. Xander Schauffele is eligible, but he's decided not to play. Disappointing. I'm disappointed in that. I don't know if he'll be there for any social function. I know they're gathering for a team dinner on Tuesday, the 9th of September, which is the day that we're recording this introduction to the podcast. I just think you need to play. You need to be there. And it's a good sign for the Americans because 2 years ago, they didn't play pretty much at all. Between the end of the FedEx Cup and the matches in Italy, and they got absolutely smoked. Because of the great play from really both sides at the Walker Cup, the U.S., yes, they won, but there's so many good players that competed. And I reached out to a good friend of our show, senior writer at Golf Week, Adam Shupak, who was on site at Cypress Point. And I said, Adam, you know, can you give me a couple, maybe three players who really stood out from those matches in terms of their potential as not only future tour players, but potential major champions? Wrote me back, said Jackson Koivun. He says he's ready for the big time. Jackson has made a number of cuts on the PGA Tour as an amateur. And Adam wrote, need to see how he plays without that amateur symbol by his name, but he is going to be legit. Adam Shupak also said, I was impressed by the U.S. amateur champ, Mason Howell, and the poise he showed at 18, one of the critical matches. He wasn't scared by the moment. And then he said, I like Niall Donegan. Lawrence Donegan is an outstanding journalist in Scotland. His son, Niall, says really played well. He says, I feel like I only saw him hit good shot after good shot, and his ability to rally on the back nine says something to me. So we thank Adam Shupak for those comments. And I hope you had the opportunity, like I said, to see the Walker Cup at Cypress Point. It's just one of those places. And Bob Bupka was one of those guys. And as I said earlier, I miss him. I miss that voice. I know that Janice, who's gotten through this as best she can, misses him dearly. We gave him a great send-off, and
Bubka, I get the feeling that you're looking down and listening and approving what we're doing as we carry on Musings on Golf in your name. It is a solo show now, but it'll always be my co-host Bob Bubka. Kelly Elbin signing off. Musings on Golf.